Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and joining me, as always, is Mike.
Hey, everyone. Great to be here.
Today is June 11th, 2026, and this is episode number 423. We are looking back at the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, June 10th. We have a really fantastic lineup today. We are talking about Apple dropping a major new project for macOS. A fascinating case study on why going back to basic HTML doubled a company's user base. A landmark legal ruling in Germany that could completely change how Google handles AI search overviews. A hilarious data-free file system called PyFS. And finally, Mercedes-Benz starting large-scale production on a new type of electric motor that has the hardware hackers very excited.
I cannot wait to get into that legal ruling, Sarah. But let us start with Apple. The top story yesterday with over 1,200 points was a GitHub repository from Apple called macOS Container Machines. Tim Sneath from Apple actually jumped into the comments to clarify what this is. Essentially, they are introducing a way to run containers on macOS using a lightweight virtual machine for each container.
Right. And if you are a developer using a Mac, you know that running Linux containers has always been a bit of a friction point. Docker desktop is heavy, and file system performance has historically been a massive bottleneck. What Apple is doing here is using their open source containerization package to spin up a minimal VM with a dedicated kernel for each container. They are promising better security, better privacy, and much better performance, with boot times comparable to running containers in a shared VM.
The Hacker News comments were all over this, and the immediate comparison everyone made was to Microsoft's Windows subsystem for Linux, specifically WSL2. A user named Mike Purvis pointed out that this sounds like a lot of the exact same choices and compromises Microsoft made. Someone even jokingly called it the Darwin BSD subsystem for Linux.
It really is a similar architectural choice, but the technical details in the thread were super interesting, especially around the file system. A user named Bogentech asked how this is different from simple bind mounts, and JDub had a great explanation. Because it is Linux running in a virtual machine, it cannot just bind mount into the macOS host file system natively, so Apple is using VirtIOFS.
Which is a huge deal for performance. Another user, Mio Tama, noted that macOS container file system I.O. has been notoriously slow, which breaks a lot of basic dev container use cases. There was a really good debate in the comments about whether containers are actually a security boundary, because on native Linux, containers share the kernel, so their isolation relies entirely on Linux namespaces and C groups. But on macOS, because you are forced to use virtualization to get that real Linux kernel, you actually get hardware-level VM isolation as a bonus.
Exactly. It is a really smart move by Apple to formalize this and bake it deeper into the OS. It shows they are paying attention to the developer experience.
Speaking of developer experience, let us pivot to our second story, which got over 1,000 points. It is a blog post titled, "Building an HTML-first site doubled our users overnight." This was written by a developer named Alistair Davidson, who is doing contract work for a regulated utility company.
This story was wild, Mike. The company had a major problem. Customers were trying to apply for services, and the previous contractors had built a massive React single-page application to handle a simple form. It was such a disaster that they had to pull it offline after just 3 days because of customer complaints. It was full of loading spinners, it was not accessible, and get this, it tried to store image uploads in local storage, which has a strict 5 MB limit.
That is just architectural malpractice. So Alistair comes in, takes one look, and says they need to rewrite it. He makes the bold decision to build an HTML-first site using Astro. No massive JavaScript bundles, just progressive enhancement using web components. The form worked perfectly fine without JavaScript, even on outdated browsers or terrible network connections. And the result? The number of people completing the form doubled literally overnight.
The anecdote he included in the post really stuck with me. He talked about seeing a young woman in a housing benefits office, clearly in a tough spot in life, using a PlayStation Portable on complimentary Wi-Fi to browse government housing benefit pages. The PSP browser is incredibly weak, but the UK government pages are written in simple HTML, so they worked perfectly for her. That is the reality of public services. You cannot ship 20 megabytes of JavaScript to someone standing in a field with a decade-old Android phone on a 3G connection.
The Hacker News comments on this were incredibly passionate. A lot of people were venting about the current state of web development. A user named Chow had a very empathetic but revealing comment. They pointed out that a lot of junior and mid-level engineers today literally do not know how to build a website without React. They went through a boot camp where they learned React first, and they never learned how to stand up a boring HTTP server to handle a standard HTML form post.
Yes, and another user named Consigns replied saying that is a huge problem, especially for government or utility websites. They called it a culture of not giving a damn about the end user. Devs are testing these React monstrosities on their brand new iPhones on fast 5G networks, completely oblivious to the fact that it takes 30 seconds to load on a cheap Android phone.
There was also a really interesting side discussion about whether AI and large language models are going to make this better or worse. One user suggested LLMs could help write clean HTML, but another user named XP84 pointed out that LLMs are trained on the internet as it exists today, and since the training data is full of over-engineered React garbage, the AI is probably just going to spit out more bloated junk, just faster.
It is a sobering thought. But Alistair's success story proves that going back to basics is not just a nostalgic exercise. It directly impacts the bottom line and user success.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of AI, our third story is a massive legal development out of Europe. The headline is German ruling declares Google liable for false answers in AI overviews. This had nearly 1,000 points, and the implications are just staggering.
This is a landmark case from the Regional Court of Munich. Basically, Google's AI overview in the search results falsely linked two Munich-based publishing companies to scams and shady business practices. The AI basically hallucinated a connection between these legitimate publishers and some actual scam companies. The publishers sued, and the court hit Google with a temporary injunction.
The critical part of this ruling is how the court classified the AI overview. Historically, search engines have been protected from liability because they are just pointing to third-party content. It is the classic indirect infringer defense. But the German court said no, AI overviews are not search results. The AI is rewriting and judging results in its own words. It is creating new, substantive statements that do not even exist in the linked sources. Therefore, the AI overview is Google's own content, and Google is directly liable for it.
Google tried to argue that users know not to blindly trust AI, and that users should check the linked sources themselves. But the court completely rejected that defense. They pointed out that studies show users almost never click the sources in AI overviews. The court compared it to press law, saying if a newspaper prints a defamatory headline, they are liable even if the reader does not read the full article to get the nuance.
The Hacker News community immediately zeroed in on the scale of this problem. The article mentioned a recent analysis showing that Google's Gemini 3 model is about 91% accurate in these overviews. For everyday use, that sounds great, but at Google's scale, handling billions of queries, a 9% failure rate means millions of wrong answers every single hour.
Exactly. And if those wrong answers are defaming people or businesses, the legal exposure is astronomical. And this does not just affect Google. The comments pointed out that this sets a precedent that could hit Perplexity, OpenAI Search GPT, Claude, anyone doing AI-powered search summarization. If you paraphrase the web and get it wrong, you own the lie.
It really feels like the end of the Wild West era for generative AI and search, at least in Europe. It will be fascinating to see if this holds up on appeal and if other jurisdictions adopt the same logic.
For sure. All right, let us take a breather with our fourth story, which is a bit of classic Hacker News humor. It is a GitHub repo called PyFS, the data-free file system, which got around 600 points yesterday.
I loved this one. So the premise of PyFS is that pi is an infinite non-repeating decimal, which means that theoretically, any finite sequence of numbers exists somewhere within pi. So instead of storing your files on a hard drive, PyFS just finds the exact sequence of your file's data within pi and saves the index location and the length. Boom, data-free storage.
It is the ultimate compression algorithm joke. The README says, why waste exabytes of space when every file that could possibly exist, including all copyright infringement, is already sitting right there in Pi? You just need to look it up.
The comments were fantastic. A user named Jamwise brought up the Library of Babel concept, noting that while this is a fun thought experiment, mathematically, you run into a huge problem. The index number required to point to your data in Pi would eventually become larger than the data itself.
Right. Someone joked that you just need to solve that by finding the index of your index in Pi and then doing that recursively until you get a single digit.
Which is a great computer science joke, but there was actually a really deep philosophical discussion that spun out of this. People started talking about how large language models are essentially a form of lossy compression. A user linked to a recent 3Blue1 video about how compression is intelligence. The idea is that an LLM compresses the entire internet into a set of weights, not by storing the text, but by learning the underlying patterns and rules of human language.
That was a brilliant connection. Someone did back-of-the-envelope math showing that storing all valid forward sequences in English would take gigabytes, but an LLM, a fraction of that size, can generate coherent prose because it compressed the logic, not just the data. So what started as a joke about Pi turned into a really profound discussion about information theory, only on Hacker News.
Only on Hacker News.
All right, our final story today takes us into the physical world. Mercedes-Benz has officially started large-scale production of electric axial flux motors. This story got over 500 points.
This is a really cool hardware story. A couple of years ago, Mercedes acquired a UK company called YASA, which specializes in axial flux motors. Traditional electric vehicle motors are radial flux, where the magnetic field moves perpendicular to the axis of rotation. In an axial flux motor, the magnetic field moves parallel to the axis.
The real-world benefit of this is that axial flux motors are incredibly thin and incredibly light while delivering massive torque. There was a video linked in the comments showing a factory tour, and these motors look like thick metal pancakes. They are so much smaller than what we are used to seeing in a Tesla or a standard EV.
The Hacker News community immediately started dreaming up projects. A user named T. Clancy said that every time they see a cool EV innovation, they just think about the restomod potential in 5 to 10 years. They were talking about retrofitting a Pontiac Fiero to make it as light as possible.
The restomod debate was actually the most interesting part of the thread. People are already swapping Tesla drivetrains into vintage Jaguars and classic cars. But a user named Lob, who is an antique BMW enthusiast, chimed in to say that electric swaps actually ruin the vintage driving experience. They drive a 1976 BMW 2002, and they argued that the punchy four-cylinder engine, the manual gearbox, the vibration, and the mechanical feedback are the entire point of driving a classic car.
It is the classic debate of performance versus soul, but then you had people looking at it from a completely different angle. A user named Surf mentioned they are converting their sailboat to electric. They are ripping out a 300-pound diesel engine and a 30-gallon fuel tank and replacing it with a 45-pound electric motor. That frees up nearly 500 pounds of capacity for batteries. For marine applications, the weight savings of these axial flux motors are an absolute game changer.
Yeah, whether you are trying to preserve the soul of a classic BMW or just trying to quietly cruise in a sailboat, the hardware innovation here is undeniable. Mercedes scaling this up means the technology is going to get cheaper and trickle down to the hobbyist market eventually.
I cannot wait to see what people build with them. Well, that covers our top stories for today. We went from Apple's new container architecture to the beauty of plain HTML, navigated the legal minefields of AI search, stored some files in Pi, and finished up with next-generation electric motors.
A truly classic Hacker News spread. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or colleague.
We will be back tomorrow with another breakdown of the front page. Until then, keep building and keep hacking. See you tomorrow.